Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lee.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties. If you want to check them out, just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. Over the last year, we've had some incredible rental property owners on this show. I know I've learned a lot hearing their stories, and I've personally been really inspired, and I hope that you have as well. But the truth is that things don't always go right. You can make mistakes, you can make bad investments, and bad things can happen to you. And I think it's really important to hear those shows, and I think we can maybe actually learn more from people that have made mistakes than people that have been super successful. One of my favorite shows is episode number 9. We talked to Jim Adams, and Jim told his story of how he bought 100 properties. He was on top of the world. The properties were cash flowing like crazy. And then the economy crashed, and he couldn't fill his houses. He had a lot of vacancy. He couldn't get the same kind of rents he was getting. And he ended up getting foreclosed on 100 times. He lost every single property. He ended up having to declare bankruptcy, and one night things got so bad he had to sell his wedding ring to have money to buy his family dinner. I mean, it's just a horrible story. And so I think that hearing those stories is actually good. I think we can learn a lot by figuring out the mistakes other people have made along the way and avoid making those mistakes ourselves. So joining me on the show today is Jeremy Paris. And Jeremy has tried several times to buy rental properties, and every time things have gone bad. And the last time things went so bad, he ended up losing his houses and he ended up having to declare bankruptcy. And he's building his way out of this. But I think that we can probably learn a lot hearing his story, and hopefully we can avoid some of the mistakes that he's made. So let's get right into the interview. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks. Glad to be here.
So let's walk through your story here. So you've had a couple of different properties, and they've all kind of gone bad.
For one way, shape, or form, they've all gone bad.
Well, let's walk through your deals one by one and figure out what happened, figure out where things went wrong. Your very first property was in Oklahoma. Tell me about that property.
Okay, so when I started out, I knew that I wanted to get into real estate. I had bought Carlton Sheets's course during one of my late night buying sprees with my credit card. And so I started learning how to different techniques for trying to buy property with no money down. But then I went in the Army, and when I went active duty, my first duty assignment was Oklahoma. So I left Buffalo, went to Oklahoma, and I needed a place to live. So I was looking at some properties in it. Oklahoma in Lawton was the city. It was the 6th cheapest place to live in America at the time.
Okay.
So buying property was kind of like the right thing to do. And I'm thinking this is going to go up in value over time. This is going to be a great investment. But I didn't need any of the Carlton Sheets techniques because now I had the VA loan available to me. So I was going to get the property for no money down anyway.
That's great. So you bought the house. You didn't have to put any money into the deal. Maybe just some closing costs?
Yeah, my closing was actually $47.
Wow. That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And so tell me about the house. What kind of property was it?
So this was a duplex. So it was side by side, 2-unit. And it was, I think it was 2 bedrooms each. But it was a pretty nice property. And so right away, I put a renter in the other side, and the money coming in from the rent was paying for the mortgage.
Awesome. So you were living free.
I was living free.
No mortgage.
And the Army was giving me money for housing. So
that's perfect.
It definitely supplemented my very low-paying Army paycheck.
Well, that sounds perfect. Honestly, that sounds like a deal I would do any day of the week. How did things go bad?
Before I ever even made my first payment on the mortgage, I got orders for Alaska.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't too long before I was already an absentee landlord, which wow. I figured it's not a big deal. Instead of trying to sell the house before I went to Alaska, I would just rent out both sides, and now it would be a cash flowing property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and you're making crazy cash flow. I mean, because your first tenant is paying the mortgage, the second tenant is all profit. So that's
exactly
a great property.
Right, right. And so I found I didn't want to go with just anybody for managing the property. I had heard a lot of horror stories. So I went with REMAX thinking, you know, they're a big name in real estate.
Sure.
They're gonna take care of this. Mm-hmm. And so they had a management company. And for a while, when I was over in Alaska, everything was great. I had the money coming in on a regular basis. And every once in a while, I would, I'd call and talk to the management company and they say, everything's going great. But then I got something in the mail saying that that one tenant was being evicted.
Hmm.
And then I think it was like a month later, the other tenant left.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, okay, what's going on? And so I talked to REMAX and they said, yeah, we're going to try to get somebody in there. And so then I didn't hear from them. And I checked in with them a couple months later and it still wasn't rented. So at this point, I think it was just I'm thinking the economy is bad. You know, something's going on. It wasn't rented for 6 months, and I called and talked to him, and I'm like, "What is going on that it's not rented? You know, all this time, neither side is rented." And they said, "Well, there's some damage to the house, and I think that's causing people not to want to rent there."
And they had never told you.
Never told me that there was damage.
Oh, wow.
So I had them send me pictures and they went and they took pictures and it was absolutely destroyed. It took a while to save up enough money to actually fix the place up. And so I think it was vacant for about a year. And finally, I was able to go there with my father and my brother and we fixed the place up. We spent a whole week just going through and we replaced just about every piece of drywall in the one unit. Had to replace the doors and the screens and everything.
Yeah.
But once it was all fixed up, both sides rented out like right away.
Of course. Yeah. When you have a property in good condition, it's going to rent. I think the biggest takeaway that our listeners can take out of this is that you need to be on top of your property manager. 6 months is way too long to not be communicating with your manager. I think our listeners should really stay on top of their property manager, especially when they're marketing the property. I'd be calling every week and find out how many showings we've had, what they're doing to market the property, what's new on the market, what's rented. Find out why it's sitting there. A property should never be sitting there for 6 months. And I think that, Jeremy, I think you probably could have found out a lot sooner if you had been talking to your manager that the property was in bad condition. I mean, no excuse for the property manager. They definitely should have told you the condition of the house. But I think if you had been communicating with your manager better, I think that this probably could have been avoided and resolved quickly. So, all right, tell me, how did you get out of this? What did you end up selling the house for?
So I tried to sell it for quite a while, but it was very hard to sell because an entire regiment moved out of the Lawton, Oklahoma area. They moved down to Texas. And so there was less people in the military there. And that whole town does nothing but surround the military. So, you know, when the military's gone, nothing is going on in the town. And so I was having a hard time trying to get it sold. Nobody really wanted it because everybody coming on to post to move there would get on post housing right away. So there was a lot of vacant properties besides mine. But mine, I at least had renters in, but I couldn't get it sold for a while.
When you finally got the house sold, how much did you sell it for?
I think I sold it for $42,000.
Okay.
The area had depressed a little bit. I bought it for 45 originally.
Okay. So you lost a few thousand dollars, but at least you're done. You're out of there. It's time to move on. So the next adventure, the next the next properties you bought were in Baltimore. So walk me through what happened in Baltimore.
So I kind of wanted to do it the same way, instead of trying to do it the hard way of, you know, convincing people to give you a house for no money down, because I still didn't have any money. I used my VA loan and I bought a condo, and then I lived in it for a year or maybe 2 years. And then I moved out of it and just rented the condo out.
Okay.
So that was bringing in, a good amount of money.
And so were you able to cover the mortgage renting out the condo?
I was, I think I was making about $300 or so.
Okay. So you were covering the mortgage, taxes, insurance, and then you had an extra $300 a month.
Knowing what I know now, I know that that's not an extra $300.
Right. Cause you're going to have repairs. Sure. Sure. You're going to have vacancy. Yeah.
But back then it was an extra $300.
Yeah. And this is before the market crashed.
Right. Right. This was before the market crashed. Everything was great. I was, people welcomed me in when I asked for loans.
So you moved out and then you bought a second property?
Right. So I bought this property with a friend of mine, kind of as an investment, but we were going to live there. And so it was a two master suite in Federal Hill in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And so this was an area that was up and coming. All of the hipsters were moving in, I guess. So it was... This house was a row house that had been completely gutted and flipped. And so it was absolutely beautiful, with a rooftop deck and stainless steel appliances and hardwood floors throughout. It was just beautiful and very expensive. It was like $350,000. We bought it at the top of the bubble.
Wow.
And so when that bubble burst, it went down to being appraised at $200,000.
Okay, so the house has gone down in value because the market crashed, but you still have it rented out. How did that go bad?
Well, there was another property that came into play, and that was really the keystone to the whole thing, the downward spiral, if you will.
Okay.
And so my father, he had been working as a scrapper. He was doing scrap metal for this company, where they would go and tear down old factories, or if a train derailed, they would go with the torches and they would cut up the railroad cars for scrap metal. And he had been working with them for like 17 years, and they were treating him pretty badly. And I remember talking to him, and he was saying how, you know, he was having trouble with his lungs, and, you know, his legs were hurting, his knees were hurting, and things like that. And I'm like, well, why don't you make a doctor's appointment? He said, well, you know, I can't afford it. I don't have any insurance or anything. So I started digging in. I found out that he was making $7 an hour still. And he's one of the senior people training other people on how to use the torches. A very dangerous job. Yeah. People died in this job. People would lose, like, you know, thumbs and stuff. And so he used to tell me all of these stories, and I'm like, you're making $7 an hour and you have zero benefits? He's like, yeah, no benefits. And, so I told him that I was going to work out a plan to retire him. Mm-hmm. And so what I did is I went to Buffalo, where we're originally from, and, the housing market is great there for rentals. So I bought a 4-unit house for $45,000, and, three of the units were in great condition, and one of them was a little bit beat up, needed some work. So we put my dad in the one that needed some fixing up, and he managed the other three units. And so there was a lot of cash flow coming in, because I think there was about over $900 coming in. And the mortgage was only about $500 going out.
Okay.
All of the extra money was going to my father, and he was using that to live off of.
Okay, so that's great. So he's able to live there for free, and then he's making a few hundred dollars a month.
And then I would go down there every, you know, every couple of a weekend during the month. And I would help him, you know, fix up his apartment, fixing the drywall, we put a new ceiling in and a hot water tank and all of these other appliances and things like that. So that one was getting fixed up pretty nicely.
And how did that go bad? That sounds like a perfect situation you had going on there.
So what happened was when I bought it, it was like very soon after I bought it and I got the mortgage. And this was, again, at the top of the bubble. Mm-hmm. Bank of America called me up and they said, hey, we're looking at your mortgage and we have a new product now. And I want you to come in and take a look at it. I think we could save you some money.
Okay.
And I'm like, hey, I could save some money.
Even, more cash even flow. More. That's great. Right. Yeah.
Even more money to go to my dad to help him out. So I went and I talked to him and they did up all of the paperwork. And they're like, okay, you're paying this now. Here's what you could be paying. And it was like almost $200 cheaper than what I was paying. I was like, yeah, this is a no-brainer.
No-brainer, sure.
I signed the line and, you know, went back and told my dad, hey, guess what? There's more money coming in now. So, you know, things are going well.
Yeah. Everything sounds great with that deal, especially after the refi. How did that possibly go bad?
So my father gave me a call and he told me, hey, I got this letter in the mail and it says that I'm being evicted. And I'm like, Dad, what are you talking about? I own the house. I'm not kicking you out.
Right.
And he's like, well, no. And he starts reading me what it says in the note. And it's this guy saying that he just bought the property and he's, you know, kicking out all of the tenants. He said all four of the tenants got this letter saying that he was going to be looking at doing some repairs and they were all being evicted with the 30 days notice. And I'm thinking now, like, this guy is trying to scam them. So I'm gonna give this guy a call. Mm-hmm. So I call him up and he's like, yeah, I bought the house a couple months ago at the auction and I own it.
And the auction?
Like, no. Yeah, I'm like, no, I own the house. And he's like, no, I bought it at Buffalo tax sale. So I called the city of Buffalo. And I'm like, what is going on here? And they said, well, you didn't pay your taxes for the last 2 years. And here in Buffalo, every October, if your taxes aren't paid, you know, within 2 years, then when the tax sale comes in October, they all get sold.
But your taxes, that they should be in your mortgage payment, right?
Right. So that's where the problem was, is when I got this new product by Bank of America, that $200 savings was actually because they weren't paying my escrow anymore.
Oh, wow.
So the first one, they were paying the escrow. The second one, they weren't. And I didn't pay much attention to it. I didn't catch it. So the whole time, I'm thinking everything is going great with this property. And it wasn't being paid. And now the city of Buffalo was trying to contact me. But for some reason, they had an address and a phone number from 10 years ago that the only way they could have gotten it was by looking at my credit report.
Yeah.
Right. So they were trying to call this old number and send stuff to this old address, and I was never getting it. So I hired a lawyer, and the lawyer said, yeah, we're going to get to the bottom of this. They went and talked to Buffalo. They said, everything's legal. That guy owns your house now. He bought it for $14,000. And
wow.
At this point, I had done so much work to the house that it was worth about $65,000. In fact, I put the hot water tank in after he already owned the house.
Oh my gosh. Wow, that is just horrible.
And to make matters worse now, all of the tenants got evicted, including my dad, who I retired, so he's got no place to live now, and he had to move in with a friend. And all of the extra money that I was making all off of the rent is now gone. So he was struggling until he was able to pick up his Social Security.
What did your lawyer say? Did you have any recourse at all?
When I talked to my lawyer, he referred me to another lawyer, and they said, listen, the only thing that you could do now with this with the issue in Buffalo is you have to claim bankruptcy because you still owe the money on the house and you don't even own the house anymore. So you have to claim bankruptcy and get that out from under you.
Wow. All right. So even though you've been foreclosed on, you still owe the money to Bank of America. Because Buffalo foreclosed on the property. Okay. So the loan's still there.
Right. It would have been different if Bank of America.
Right. Okay.
But the city of Buffalo took it and then sold it to somebody else. So Bank of America was still looking for their money. And so I had to claim bankruptcy. And at the time, my other houses, that the condo wasn't rented for a few months. And that the mortgage on that was like $1,200 or $1,300. So that really hurt every month when that wasn't rented.
Mm-hmm.
And then the place was upside down up in Baltimore. The $350,000 house that was upside down big time. So they all got foreclosed on and got all wrapped up into the bankruptcy.
Jeremy, I am so sorry to hear about that. That just sounds like everything was blowing up in your face and you really had no other option. What do you think is the biggest takeaway? What have you learned through this? And what do you think you would do differently if you were in this situation again?
Well, at first, for a few years, I was really angry at, you know, the city of Buffalo. I was angry at, you know, all of these external people that, you know, they took this from me. They destroyed my life for years anyway. But after a while, I started to think about it and, you know, it all really was my fault. I wasn't, the whole time that I was doing real estate, I wasn't putting any money aside for any extras. So I never had this big chunk of money in savings for the just in case. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I did have is I had extra credit. I had more credit cards that had balances on them. That didn't have balances on them. So I could always, you know, if a hot water tank blew up, I could put one on a credit card. But that's not really what you want to do when you're dealing with rental properties. And when you're making, especially cash flowing rental properties, you want to be taking some of that money and putting it aside so that you're never needing to go in and get credit for things going wrong.
Right. Right.
And if I had that extra money set aside, I could have been hiring somebody to do the things that I didn't want to do, like keeping an eye on, you know, on the books. Mm-hmm. That's something that a lot of people don't like doing. I'm one of them, but I should recognize that and say, okay, I'm going to get a bookkeeper that's going to manage all of this and make sure that, you know, I have enough money set aside for when I need it for these rentals. And buying everything with no money down, while that sounds great, it doesn't leave you much room when something bad happens.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that the mistake a lot of people make is that they look and they say, okay, my mortgage is $500 a month. I'm renting this place out for $1,000 a month, so I've got $500 a month cash flow. And that's just not true. You're going to have repairs. You're going to have vacancy. You're going to have CapEx items like replacing the roof every 20 years or replacing appliances from time to time. And making sure that you have money set aside is, I think, the difference between people that are going to be really successful owning rental properties and people that are going to really struggle with it. I actually have I call it the rental deal tool that helps you calculate how much money to set aside. If anyone wants to check it out, you can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/tool. So, Jeremy, are you done now with owning rental properties? Is this it? Have you just had enough bad things happen where you would never be interested in owning rental properties again? Or would you consider buying a rental property again at some point?
No, I'm absolutely going to be buying some properties in the future.
Awesome. I'm glad to hear that. I love seeing people buy rentals. That's great. So what do you think you'll do differently? I mean, obviously you're going to make sure you have cash reserves. Is there anything else that you would be looking for in a property this time?
There's a few things that I've been thinking about. And one of them is, I while I like, I mean, I absolutely love everything dealing with houses. I like fixing them up, and you know, I love that feeling of buying that diamond in the rough mm-hmm. and then making it look absolutely beautiful.
Yeah,
that's a great feeling. So I think some flipping is in my future.
Okay,
but I also think buying some houses that need to be fixed up, fixing them up and having them rented out is definitely in my future as well. And when I do it this time, I'm not even going to start until I have that reserve set aside. Mm-hmm. And when the money starts coming in, it's just going to keep building up that reserve even more until there's enough in that reserve to put down a good amount on buying the next property.
That is awesome. Well, Jeremy, I'm really, really happy that you've come out of this with such a good attitude. I think a lot of people would be really bitter, but it seems like you've really dealt with this and you've moved on with your life. Why don't you tell us where we can track you down online if someone wants to see what you're up to?
Sure. Well, after I got out of the military, I started to work with some veteran organizations, some veteran nonprofits, like the Veteran Artist Program. And I found out just how many veteran nonprofits are out there. And most veterans didn't know about them. So I started my own podcast called the Veteran Resource Podcast. And if you go to veteranpodcast.com, I have a weekly podcast on there. And each week I interview a different veteran-focused nonprofit to find out what they have to offer to veterans, what opportunities and what projects they have going on. And also, I'm ParisJ13 on Twitter.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and definitely check out Jeremy's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Grand Canyon University makes earning your degree possible with over 130 academic programs for traditional campus students, with more than 80 bachelor's programs offered online. GCU provides you with the personal support you need, from complimentary unofficial transcript evaluations within 24 business hours to scholarships, academic support, and your GCU graduation team led by your own university counselor. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.